All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Thursday, April 21st of 2022. For some reason, whenever I start this stream and I say what day of the week it is and the date, I always feel like I'm going to mess it up. I don't know why. I'm just reading off the bottom corner of my computer screen, and I'm like, don't mess this up. Don't mess this up. How embarrassing would it be if I accidentally said it was Friday or said it was like March or something stupid like that. Anyway, thanks for tuning into the stream here today. Happy Thursday. Hopefully your early slate, or I guess the main slate baseball lineups, are off to a decent start. Had a fun day slate here to play around with. Always fun to have a little bit of a DFS sweat going on during the day. If this is your first time watching this show, listening to this show, watching this stream, welcome. This is a open Q&A stream where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about how to build better DFS lineups, really whatever you guys want to talk about. If you have questions for me, fire them away into YouTube chat, or even better, the Office Hours channel in Slack. I answer questions here in roughly chronological order, in the order that they come in. So get your questions in early. They will get answered earlier. I do put a little bit of priority to getting to those Slack questions first. So if you're not a part of our Slack community already, there's a link to join Slack in the description of every past Office Hours video. So highly recommend joining up in Slack. You'll get access to that channel. You'll get access to the community at large. You'll get to see the sim alerts of when we are running new simulations for our games. And you'll get access to our free prop bets of the day as well in there. So I think, I know we'll all be sweating the Paul Blackburn strikeouts over here shortly. But last night, had a couple decent plays as well. Actually, it looks like so we lost the David Lynch strikeout prop yesterday. Daniel Lynch had a pretty decent game, I think. Just couldn't get up over that 4.5 strikeouts, but cashed the Tobias Harris 3-point under. So split on the prop bets for yesterday. But those free bets are posted every single day in the sports betting channel in Slack. We are pretty profitable over the course of the year here. So definitely get in, definitely start tailing those if you have access to them. But anyway, let's go ahead and start jumping in here, start talking about getting into some questions. There are a few questions in the queue here for today. I think we'll actually start over on the NBA side of things. I know I talked a little bit about how my NBA strategy for the playoffs has become a little bit more of an exploitative ownership-based strategy, just with less late swap edge available out there. Interesting slate tonight where it sounds like maybe we might get Luka back and potentially have a little bit of a late swap edge here on tonight's slate, but I think that's such important, impactful news that even if that breaks after lock, which it definitely might, I think enough of the field is probably going to figure out how to swap to account for that correctly, and I don't know how big of an edge there is with that. Probably a little bit, but maybe not a massive one. Overall, so I talked yesterday about how I've started to try to exploit ownership a little bit more here on the NBA playoffs. So let's go ahead and just dive right in and get started there. So two questions right off the bat. So Austin had said, I'm preparing for tonight's NBA slate. I ran a research build to find the highest exposed players. Any advice on how to use that information when deciding to own slash fade that player 3 max entry contest? So interesting question there. And then let me pull up this other question here from CJ. And we'll talk about this here. So CJ had asked, when discussing your process with the NBA projections yesterday, did you say if you felt the ownership was too high on your test build, then you lowered the projection in step one and vice versa? Are you trying to lower your exposure on players you feel are overexposed based on your test build? I would think that you want more exposure on underexposed plays. Am I wrong? Am I thinking thanks? So I think I managed to confuse a few people yesterday, and that was probably just the way I was saying it here. So I kind of want to just do another run through of kind of just how I'm thinking about my NBA research builds in the playoffs here. One of the first things that I have been doing, especially for the research build, is turning this minimum projection filter off, right? Because we're doing this research build to determine how likely a player is to be in the optimal lineup versus their exposure. So we want to, you know, we want to make sure that we have all of the players in the pool, right? Like even some of these guys below 15 points, even if you don't want them in your lineups, they have a percent chance to be in the optimal lineup. So we want them to show up in the research build. One strange thing I'm seeing now here is that, we kind of have this like middle ground projection for Luka, at the moment. So, that will be a little bit weird for the purposes of this. I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to this is kind of an interesting one. Let's actually, so tonight's kind of a weird, actually, let's do it for tonight. I'm just going to X Luka. I guess this is worth noting here that even though news isn't breaking, like, typically right up until lock, and there's not like the typical late scratches and crazy late swap news like there is for the regular season, probably still this is a process that you'd want to do close to lock, or at least while you have a little bit more information and some of the final sims have run. Obviously, there's going to be limitations to doing this research build at the moment. I think for simplicity, for now, I'm just going to X Luka out, assume he doesn't play, and go from there. So popped up perfectly is my research build settings. So 0-0-10. Right? I'm turning min salary to zero here as well, and we're going to do 1,500 lineups. And again, let's talk about what this actually does, right? What's actually happening here? So we have the way we end up generating our projections for players, right? We simulate these games play by play thousands of times, and that ends up generating different distributions for these players, but also individual game sims, individual outcomes of these games. And when sim variance is at 10, We are basically taking a single game simulation of every game on the slate here and building the optimal lineup for that slate sim. So we're going to do this 1,500 times, and we're basically going to sim the slate 1,500 times and see how often are different players showing up in the optimal DraftKings lineup, right? So let's build this and see what this looks like here. And then I'll talk a little bit about what I do with this. So, but that's an important concept to grasp, because I think there are times where I'll get questions from people that are, you know, ask, you know, should I do this with my research build? Should I do that with my research build? And I think starting with an understanding of what this actually is will help you determine exactly how you want to fit it into your process. It is essentially a slate simulation is ultimately what we get out of this. So, okay, so let's look here, and I'll adjust to projections just so we can see some lineups. The most important thing that I like to look at here is basically the exposure versus the ownership. And again, we're going to see some weirdness here because of Luka and the Dallas projections and sims as they are at the moment. But the exposure column, in when you're looking at 1,500 lineups with these particular settings, is an approximation of that player's percent chance of showing up in the optimal. The ownership column is an approximation, an estimate of how many lineups in the contest we expect to use that player. So any inefficiency between these two numbers, right, is a market inefficiency. One of these has to be wrong, right? Either the field is wrong, which is exploitable, or we're wrong, right? The player has a far less likely chance to be in the winning lineup than that is possible, right? So in this case, if we have 15.6 percentage points of leverage over the field here, right, that means the field is wrong on Jokic by 15.6 at least, or at max 15.6% chance, right? Like theoretically, the true numbers are probably in between these two, but there's probably an ownership inefficiency on Jokic. So what I am actually doing when it actually comes to my specific process, right, is ultimately I am taking all the players for whom have a higher percent chance to show up in the optimal lineup than their ownership projection indicates. I am bumping those projections in step one, right? And for all players that have a lower percent chance of showing up in the optimal lineup than their ownership projection indicates, I am dropping those projections in step one. I am doing this, I have personally, when I've been doing this in my process, I've been doing it in kind of a automatic way where I'm making an adjustment basically to every single player in the slate. I don't think you have to necessarily take it that far. I think especially for the case of Austin here, right, who's basically trying to build three good lineups for a three max, right? I would go ahead and look, what are some of the most inefficient ownership projections on the slate, right? Three guys that stand out: Towns, Jokic, Poole at the moment. And what are some of the most overowned players on the slate that's coming up, right? Obviously, some of these Dallas guys, again, it's a little bit weird with Luka here, but Brunson, maybe Kyle Anderson, and Bogdanovich, right? So maybe, you know, if you're trying to just build three lineups, right? Now maybe let's go back and build for a three max and see what we can get away with here. Let me go ahead. I'm going to take some notes here so I don't forget these guys. So positive leverage was Jokic, Towns, and Poole. and negative leverage was Brunson, Anderson, and Bogdanovich. So let's build now for a 3 max, though, and see what we get, right? And this is, I think the other thing that's worth noting here, too, is that ownership fade, the slider, attempts to kind of capitalize on this already, right? That is essentially what the ownership fade is doing. It's saying, you know, we don't just care about what players are going to score the most in this set of sims. We also want to have an eye towards ownership and kind of make an ownership adjusted decision every step of the way. So ownership fade will kind of help you along here. But, you know, maybe for a 3 lineup max, maybe we just do something and lock in our 3 guys, right? Let's see what happens. So we can't get away with that. We're getting the error here. That says we don't have enough to match these exposures here. So maybe we leave Poole alone. But we locked in Jokic and Towns, which is probably a kind of a creative lineup construction with having both of those expensive centers up top. And then maybe we fade Brunson, Anderson, and who was the other guy? Bogdanovich, right? So those 3 guys are already faded here, right? So for a 3 max, you may not need to do as much adjustment here in terms of what you're doing with your projections. Maybe you're just kind of keeping this stuff in mind. And if these are two of the most inefficiently owned players are the two most expensive players on the slate, maybe this is just a good way to approach the slate, especially for a 3 max. I think this is unlikely to stay. This is very early in the day for basketball here. I think these ownership projections are unlikely to stay where they are. I think both plays will be quite a bit more popular as the slate gets a little bit closer. But that's how I think about it for a 3 max. If you were playing a larger... You know, if you're playing a bigger set of lineups, right? If you're multi-entering or something like that, right? You want to build 150 lineups and take advantage of this, right? Well, then in that case, maybe we should handle this more on the projection side of things. So maybe we're going in and making adjustments to projections to get more of these guys, right? So maybe we give both of these guys a little bit of a bump because we think there's an ownership inefficiency there. Maybe we give Poole a bump. And maybe we come in here and drop these 3, right? And these aren't because I think these are better mean projections. It's because I think these are inefficiently owned players based on the way my research build came out, right? So we have a few projection updates. And basically what I've been experimenting with in my actual process is essentially this, but instead I'm doing it for every single player on the slate. And I'm doing that by exporting my research build and recalculating leverage in Excel and then making an adjustment to projections and then re-uploading projections. I don't think that's a necessary part of the process by any means. I'm just kind of experimenting with it that way. But I do think the idea of playing these shorter NBA playoff slates in an exploitative strategy is a good way to get a little bit of an edge, especially now that the late swap doesn't provide as much of an edge. We're also, you know, it's I think a decent argument to be made that in larger field GPPs, you are really probably needing to approach the actual scoring optimal to take those down. So the research build does a pretty good job of approximating the percent chance of a player showing up in that optimal. So, but cool. So anyway, let me make sure that I answered these questions in full here. So. So for Austin specifically, just to kind of wrap up here, if you're playing a 3 max, what I would probably do is run your research build and look for maybe a handful of players, any 2 to 6 players where there's really, it literally looks like ownership is going to be inefficient, like something, the field is really going to miss something on a player, and then maybe take a couple stands on your 3 lineups with those guys. So I don't think you need to fight SaberSim, right? When we did the example here, we were able to lock Jokic and Towns in. We weren't able to get to any pool, right? Maybe that's enough right there. But I wouldn't feel like just for 3 lineups that you need to go in and make an adjustment to every single player on the slate. And then for CJ, I'll just kind of clarify here. So what I am doing when I'm running these builds, these research builds, right? I am comparing the exposure. I think maybe there's a little bit of just confusion about the terms exposure and ownership here. So I am comparing the exposure of a player in the research build and treating that as an approximation of the percent chance of that player showing up in the optimal lineup to the ownership projection and looking for players that are going to be inefficiently owned by the field, whether that is because they're going to be owned too little, which is positive leverage for a research build, or because they're going to be owned too much, which is negative leverage for a research build. So, okay, yeah, Chad's here. You explained mine. I thought you said the lower projections for players overowned. I am. So that's what I did here. So based on the research build, if the slate were to start right now with the information we have, I think Brunson, Kyle Anderson, and Bogdanovich are the likely most overowned players, right? So I would lower the projections on those three guys. So. All right. Cool. In it to Bink It had asked a question here. So interesting one here. He said, is there a way to get the builder to not force in 1% owned plays as the ownership leverage? In golf, this is particularly an issue as it forces in 1 to 2 1% plays with chalk instead of going across different across the board with 5 to 10% plays. Yeah, this can happen. And I have actually noticed, I have noticed this in the past. Especially with very high levels of ownership fade, in golf lineups. So if you know, the defaults for large field GPPs, ownership fade 4, it's going to start sending you in this direction for sure. Mostly just because, you know, golf ranges of outcomes are pretty wide. The differences in projections across different salary bands are not that significant. As that ownership fade gets higher and higher, it's going to start pushing in some of those 1% owned players just because they are so much lower owned than the average player, golfer, that they pop in when you roll sims essentially where they have a ceiling outcome. If you are trying to avoid this, I think there's a couple things you can do. So I've talked a little bit before about how one of the things I used to like to do is to basically limit players that had below a certain percent chance to make the cut from being in my pool, period. Right. A lot of that came from I got tired of seeing multiple players with a 1% owned or 1% ownership projection and a very low projection and a very low overall chance to make the cut showing up in my lineups. So I think literally curating a pool and only including golfers that you are comfortable seeing in your lineups here is a good way to start there. I think another option would be to go in here and to basically set a group and to take something like maybe all of the players projected below 5% owned or whatever you wanted here. So you could do something like, let's see. And this is from last week's event, just because we don't have the Zurch Classic projections up. So you could take all the golfers that are projected under 5% owned and say less than or equal to 1 or something like that in your lineups. Honestly, what I've ended up doing instead is probably the easiest way around this, I've just turned down the ownership fade slider, and kind of relied on some of my other tools at my disposal to account for ownership. So one of those is making adjustments to projections. Similar thing for golf, right? I will run a research build, see which players I think are going to be inefficiently owned, and then make projection adjustments accordingly. Another one is just in the step 3 build process, to lower your exposure to players that you think are going over-owned and to raise your exposure to players that are under-owned while having built on a lower ownership fade slider. So I guess all of this is to say, really what I'm saying is I actually don't love the way that the ownership fade slider is applied at very high levels for golf either. And I've been relying a little bit more on making basically manual projection updates on players or exposure updates on players that I want to be over or under the field on. And just building with a lower or a 0 ownership fade slider. And that's kind of been my approach here. So that's what I would do. But good question. Okay, Nikhil had asked a question here about same team core or opposing team correlation in baseball. And he said, this was brought up on a previous Office Hours, but could you address correlation between opposing batters? For today's slate, I see that Brandon Belt has a higher correlation to some of the Mets bats than his teammates, which seems strange to me. Yeah, so I talked about this with Matt before I went live. And the main reason why I think in particular for some of these Giants bats that we're seeing that do have the decent correlations to some of these other Mets hitters, right? Comes from these very home run dependent hitters, right? So like Belt projects pretty well, has pretty high upside outcomes. The highest overall hitter on the Giants, probably a pretty well projected player on the slate. Period. Yeah, the best overall projected hitter on the slate, but you know, a lot of that is coming from a percent chance to hit a home run, right? We have a 40% chance for him, or actually that's not really accurate. He has on average 0.4 home runs per game in our simulations, right? So a lot of his scoring output, really a lot of his ceiling outcomes and the games and the events that are going to pull up this average here are dependent on him hitting a home run, right? Which isn't really as much dependent on his other teammates, right? If a you know, a batter has a very high on base percentage and is going to rack up a lot of points in different simulations by getting on base and having stolen bases and scoring runs and things like that, it's going to make sense that he's more correlated to his teammates. In the case of Belt, he's so home run dependent that, you know, his correlations to some of his teammates may be a little bit lower, and that home run percentage, right, because he is on the away team, makes it more likely that the Mets are going to bat in the ninth, which ends up in increasing that correlation to some of those Mets batters a little bit, who have a little bit of a higher percent chance to get another plate appearance in the ninth inning. So that's what's going on there. I think the other thing to remember too is that, you know, it's these correlations themselves are, you know, they're small numbers, right? We have this stacking effect that comes together because all of these players are a little bit correlated to one another. So when you put five of them in a lineup together, that starts to be a pretty correlated group of players. But these are small independent correlations between any one player anyway. And the smaller the correlations, I do think there's something to be said about the correlations themselves start to get a little bit harder to just explain away, right? You know, even if you think about a football example, it's very easy to explain why a quarterback is positively correlated to a wide receiver. And that is shown in the value of the correlation itself, right? It's an intuitive thing, so you have a big correlation value associated with it. In the case of two opposing wide receivers in a football game who are also generally going to be positively correlated, but much lower, there is an argument to be made there, right? You have a high-scoring, pass-heavy football game where both teams are kind of going back and forth, but it's a little bit of a shakier correlation in that that goes along with that lower independent correlation value. So I think there's something kind of similar here where, you know, if we're talking about, like, if we pick a random game here, right, like these opposing team correlations are typically, I think, going to be non-zero, but they're small. And I think it's somewhat difficult to just explain it away in a very intuitive feeling. That's why the correlation is here, because we're talking about a correlation that's only like 0.05 to 0.08 anyway. But that is why I think in particular for this game, I think the home run dependency of these Giants bats as the away team is creating a little bit of a more outsized correlation to the home team, in this case, the Mets here, for this particular game. So, with that said, if you disagree, so there are some questions here. Well, HC said, I got a Mets Giants stack today. I got a fair bit of that too. And Eric said, I noticed Saber likes to game stack. How do I get Saber to not game stack? I mean, I think there's a few things. I think one, if you do not want us to game stack, right? Really what that is saying is that that is a de-emphasis on correlations, right? That is, you want to value the correlation data less strongly in your lineup building process. The easiest way to create that change in your lineups would be to turn down the correlation slider. And you could couple turning down the correlation slider with setting some stacking rules to say, you know, I want to use the correlation data from the sims a little bit less. So I'm going to turn that maybe down to half of what it is by default. And you could kind of maybe back that up by putting in a stacking rule or something like that. So you're turning down the correlation. So you're not maybe getting as many of those game stacks if you don't want them here. Putting a stacking rule back in place to kind of force in some of that same team correlation that you want here. But I really, I wouldn't, I wouldn't worry too much about these game stacks. These teams don't really affect each other in a negative way at all. There's essentially no argument to say that these two teams are negatively correlated, right? And there is, I think, a decent reason to believe that some of these light positive correlations are accurate. And there's plenty of games where there's just going to be a strong overall scoring environment because of a park factor or weather. So this has been a really positive or a really common talking point here to start the season here on Office Hours. But I wouldn't worry so much about your game stacks for baseball. I don't think they are something really to pay attention to much at all, even. I don't think they add value. I don't think it adds value to try to go and limit them and remove them from your pool. So, but I do think if you want to de-emphasize the correlation a little bit, and reduce the percent chance of that happening in some of these games where those correlation values are a little bit higher, I think turning down the correlation slider a little bit and putting in a stacking rule is probably the best way to do that. And you may still get a little bit. I mean, the other thing too, you know, I think that the best answer in general for how to do different things on SaberSim is to use the different sets of tools at your disposal. So maybe you turn down the correlation slider, you set a stacking rule, but then also in step three, limit your exposure to any other game stacks that are showing up, right? So let's see what we'll run a build for a 20 max, 10 to 50K here, default settings. Well, not default settings, correlation turned down, 5 stack rule set, and we can limit or reduce exposure to any game stacks that are still popping up. I'm curious to see how many we're getting here. So, Shady Advice actually makes a really good point too. You can set a stacking rule for max players per game. And that actually is a really good point here. So yeah, so actually still getting quite a few game stacks, even with the correlation turned down, right? Maybe we want to limit our exposure to this a little bit, do something like that, so we're not so exposed to this game stack here. You could also do something like this. You know, I think this would be another way of doing it. So have to have this. This would be kind of a more nuclear option, though. You have to have 5 players from the same team, and no more than 5 players from the same game. This will also start to impact your pitchers a little bit as well, at least with the way the rule was created here. But I think some combination of lowering your correlation slider, setting a stacking rule, editing these exposures in step three, can get what you are looking for here, a little bit closer. So. And make those adjustments too. The last point I'll make on this here before we move on, make those adjustments if that is how you want your lineups to look. There's a great deal of variety in terms of it, and diversity in terms of what kind of lineups can be successful in a baseball slate. So, oh, interesting. It's interesting how we define a game stack here. 3 players playing from the same game basically creates a game stack. So that's interesting. But anyway, my point is if you just don't want to see game stacks, just X them out, right? There are typically probably plenty of lineups that don't have a game stack in there that you can play instead. So cool. Okay. I don't have any other questions at the moment. Mark had asked for a demo of how to late swap with a mobile device. So I think since we have the time to do that, I'll do a quick one walking through how to do that here on mobile, at least as best as I can on my desktop browser. And if you guys have any other questions for me, go ahead and fire away now. Oh, actually, wait. Whoops. I'm losing it here. I forgot. There's some questions in YouTube chat. So let's get to these here. Carlos said, what is the motivation to bring down max exposure? There can be a variety of different reasons to adjust your max exposure. I think it depends a little bit on the sport and the contest you're playing. But broadly speaking, it's mostly a risk management question, right? So, you know, adjusting Dylan Cease's max exposure down for this particular build here, I think the easiest way of thinking, why would I want to do that, is asking yourself, are you comfortable with 80%, 16 of your 20 lineups having this one player in them, right? Who projected pretty well here, but has a wide and diverse range of outcomes of what can actually happen. So, you know, by adjusting his maximum exposure from 80 to 50, for example, we lower the risk associated with the lineups that have that one particular player in it. That also probably reduces our raw scoring upside of our entire set of lineups as well, because now if Cease is the best play, which I think he's in the process of getting lit up right now, so kind of a funny example, if he is the actual best play, now we only have 10 lineups instead of 16 to shape the best other pieces in that lineup to get the high scoring outcome, right? So it's a risk versus upside question. We will, based on the sliders that you are using to build your lineups, right, and primarily the sim variance slider, your exposures that you are getting to different players in step three will kind of match what we feel is an appropriate amount of exposure to that player for the contest that you are building your lineups. But it's not going to be perfect for everybody. For some people, the default exposures that you get out of your build in step three will be too much exposure to the highest exposed plays, right? This is too risky of a stance to have 75% exposure to the top play. For others, you maybe want to be more exposed, right? For others, maybe you know that you want to just play these two pitchers and these two pitchers only and build every other lineup around that. So it's mostly a risk tolerance thing. I think there's some argument to be made, or not even some argument to be made. I think one other alternative here is to make adjustments to exposures from more of a strategic standpoint, right? So maybe you build your lineups and then in step three, I don't know, maybe in your research build. So actually, in my research builds today, I thought that Dylan Cease was going to be well overowned. So I actually am well under the field on here. So maybe for a strategic reason, I end up just Xing him out or lowering my exposure dramatically in step three, and play 20 lineups of my pool of 500 that have no Dylan Cease instead, right? That would be a little bit more of like an exploitative strategic decision to change my exposures or set a maximum exposure here. But I think the primary goal of adjusting exposures in step three is to fine tune your lineups from the standpoint of risk management for what level of comfort you have being however much exposed to a certain player, right? And there's like a financial component to this, right? So if you're playing, if this is, you know, if this is for the $4, right? You're playing the $4 20 max, right? These are your lineups. 75% exposure to Dylan Cease, right? That's 60. You are investing $60 of value into Dylan Cease lineups, right? So I think sometimes that's a decent way to think about it if you don't have an intuitive sense of percentages, right? Like if 75% of your lineups doesn't really mean anything to you, think about it from the standpoint of what's your financial investment that backs that. Right? Are you comfortable investing 60 of your $80 that you have into the slate into this one asset? That's how I often think about this. So, okay. I thought I'd saw another question here, but I missed it. So cool. Let's do a quick, demo of the entry editor here in mobile. I'm going to try to do this to reset these. I'm going to try to do this here on my computer. Man, my dog is really conked out back there. I'm going to try to do this on my computer here. The last time I did this, it didn't really work correctly. So we're going to try it today here and see what happens. All right, hang on. Give me a sec here. We're going to try to emulate like an iPhone or something here. Okay. All right. This looks pretty good. We got this going here. Brad said, get a new PC yet, Jordan? Yes, I did. We are on the new PC. Over the weekend, I put it all together And it's been much better so far this week here. So much faster. I finally feel like I'm back in the modern era of computer technology, which is good. Okay, so let's do this real quick. So this is from Mark. He said, please show us how to late swap with a mobile device. First of all, I'll mention that there is a tutorial on our support documentation as well. If you just go support.sabersim.com and just type mobile, the first thing that comes up, how can I use the entry editor on a mobile device? I basically actually did this on my phone for some random slate this past basketball season and just recorded my process for both, I think, DraftKings and FanDuel. Actually, yeah, DraftKings and FanDuel, walking through it. So you can check that out as well. But since we have the time today, let's talk about what this looks like here. So what we need first is some entries here. So you would similar step here, right? But you're just on the phone. Download template file from DraftKings. This part does on a phone, it can do kind of different things. I've heard of different devices doing different things for different people. For me, this works pretty good. It downloads the template file to my files on my phone. For other people, I've heard that you actually have to go to DraftKings and just go get the file yourself. It does change a little bit there, phone to phone. Keep in mind that that would be something you would do on the DraftKings mobile site, not the app. That's a very important point to make here, is that every interaction you have with DraftKings or FanDuel when you're doing this on your phone is with the mobile versions of the site, or in the case of FanDuel, I guess, not even really the mobile version you would be using the browser version of those tools, not the app. So then we can select the file. Obviously, it's going to be wherever your files download to your phone here. So this is the part that always seems to work kind of weird. We're good. So, all right. So now we'll just fill some lineups here. Let's see. This is the part that never works correctly when I'm doing this on my computer. Sorry, guys. This is the emulating a phone on my browser for my desktop never seems to work so well. Let me try this one more time here. I'm going to just try to build some lineups quickly to use, and then we'll pull this back up. On a phone, it actually works fine, but I can't very easily screen share my actual phone. So let's do this. Okay, so I built some lineups here, and now we can come back. And then we'll click fill. Okay, and now we have lineups. Very similar here, right? Very similar to how it looks on desktop. You'll still fill and then click the download button. Again, this is another situation where I've heard from people that for some phones, download and open DraftKings will open DraftKings, but it won't actually download the file. So you may just need to just download entries and just have DraftKings open in another tab or something like that. Kind of depends on your device here. So then we'll just download and open DraftKings, and then we can upload these. And then for late swap, very simple, right? Same deals, same as it typically is, right? So we'll do swap, late swap, change any sliders, change anything you want to do here, right? Fairly straightforward, late swap 150. And then we'll rebuild those lineups. So the mobile experience really is actually like step-by-step identical to how it is on a desktop. It's just, everything's a little bit closer together. It's a mobile optimized browser and app. This is the download button here. So you'll click this button. This will download a new version of your entries file. And then you can go back over to DraftKings and re-upload that. So I have a sip of water here. I'm drying up. So, and then again, we have this other separate resource available on our support documentation as well. So I'd go watch that if you want a refresher there. But cool. John says, how do you download your data to include the exposures calculated for each player? So what I actually do here is I will download the lineups. I will download the full set of 1500 lineups from the research build. I will put those into an Excel workbook. And then I use a COUNTIF function It's called a count if function, basically. So you can say, I will count if the range of those lineups and the criteria for counting will be the player ID. And then that will basically say how that will count it up, like every that will count up every instance of that player ID in the set of 1500 lineups. And then I divide that by the number of lineups, which is almost always 1500, to basically recalculate the exposure in the set in Excel. So that's how I go about doing that. Basically the one thing you'll have to do is you'll have to have what you can do is if you go to the home tab and download here, right? Download the player projections. This will give you a CSV that includes all of these. Pull this up. So these are all your player projections or all your player IDs, right? So here's the list of basically everything that needs to get counted up. So that is the way I go about doing that. Now, I should note here, you know, this is like extra, right? I don't want to give anybody the indication that the typical use case or for SaberSim or the steps that you have to take to be successful with SaberSim for NBA DFS involves writing a COUNTIF function into an Excel workbook and running research builds and downloading them, right? It's kind of just something that I've incorporated into my process as a way to get an additional exploitative ownership edge in my process, right? I don't want anybody to feel like they have to do that. And I think, again, ownership fade itself is kind of approximating this already. It's already making an ownership-based decision in your lineups, right? This is just kind of a way that I've found to add on or expand upon that. But yeah, that's basically what I do is I download the whole set of lineups and then use the COUNTIF function to repurpose the exposures or to rebuild the exposures in Excel. So that is what I've been doing. Cool. Any other questions for me here today? Well, keep an eye out for questions here. Go ahead and fire away, guys, if you have any questions for me. In the meantime, I will maybe build a little bit of excitement with some features or some changes that are coming down the pipeline here. We have a big new front-end release that is probably about a week away from coming out. It will include, I would say, a pretty big overhaul to the way that the entry editor and the late swap tools actually work. It will, instead of having a situation where this entry editor is kind of on its own little island here and you have to go to the entry editor to upload and then you have to come back to the entry editor after you've done all your work to fill everything and put it together, you will basically be able to upload your entries file at any step of the process, more or less. And when you get to the end of a build, you'll be able to automatically just choose what contest that build is supposed to go into and fill it from the build itself. And even download your entries file from there. The late swap is going to get quite a bit easier too, as well. You'll be able to late swap directly from pulling up your step two page here, specify what contests you are late swapping, do everything that way there. There will be some additional controls as well to be able to take your projections and exposures from a given build and send them back to the home screen. So I know one thing that people have talked about before is they spend a bunch of time editing exposures in a build, and then news breaks and new sims run and projections change, and you need to rebuild your lineups, but you don't want to waste all that work you spent dialing in your exposures on step three. Well, you'll now be able to, from a build, send your exposures to the home screen to rebuild from there. So I'm probably forgetting other things here. There are kind of a lot of features, a lot of commonly requested changes that have been talked about on this stream here quite a bit. So those will all most likely be releasing here, I would say, in the next week. That will be coupled with a video going live onto our YouTube channel that where I will kind of walk through some of those changes, what to expect, where to find things if you're a little bit lost, but super excited about that. So Looking forward to that. I see some other questions coming in here now. Diego said, I've noticed in MLB, if I'm joining a three entry max contest, for example, one of the teams will be stacked against a pitcher I have on the other two entries. So for example, it'll give me Dylan Cease on two teams, but the final team will have a 5-man Indian stack against him. Is there a rule I can set to change that so it doesn't occur? Okay. So first off, I want to make sure I'm understanding here correctly. So what it sounds like is that you're playing three lineups, and in two of them you have Dylan Cease, in the third you have a Cleveland stack, right? So it's not as if you have a Cleveland stack literally against Dylan Cease, but it's two lineups with Cease, one with a Cleveland stack, right? Because basically this toggle is going to be off most of the time, right? This will be off on all slates larger than three games. So this won't even allow you to have literally a Cleveland stack against Cease in the same lineup, right? It sounds like what you're trying to avoid is a situation where you have one lineup with Cleveland, one lineup with Cease. I mean, I will say, I don't think that's necessarily a problem, right? Those are different lineups. They are independent from one another. It's not even necessarily so much of a hedge, but it does lower your variance, right? It gives you more diversity. I mean, for three lineups, I can get it, but you know, for 150 lineups, it is not really as if you would scale that up, or like, I wouldn't scale that up to saying I only in 150 lineups, I only either want Cease or Cleveland. Right. And if I'm playing Cease in any lineups, I don't want any Cleveland stacks, right? Like it's okay to mix and match like that a little bit, but assuming you don't want to, I think probably what I would do is, probably just handle this on step three, right? So let's build some lineups. And see what we get. But I would probably say, you know, you can go in and look at your pitchers, see what pitchers you're getting here, and then just remove stacks for the teams opposing those pitchers if they are also popping up. So we'll give this a second to build, and I'll show you a little bit more of what I'm talking about here. But anyway, so one sec here. Okay, so we have only Cease and Blackburn, right? So basically we can just go in here and say, okay, I don't want to play any Cleveland or Baltimore stacks. And I don't have any, but let's expand this a little bit higher and see with 10 lineups what happens. Okay, so now Cleveland, Baltimore, KC, Arizona, Detroit, and Oakland. Still not getting any. Let's see. Let's expand this up to 20. I think you get the idea of what I'm talking about anyway. Okay, so now we start to see some Cleveland stacks, right? So we don't want any Cleveland stacks because, so again, these aren't going to be in the same lineups. We have 70% Cease. We have 10% Cleveland. But we can actually filter here by Cease lineups, and we'll see that we have no Cleveland stacks in a Cease lineup. So again, I'm still okay with this personally for me, but let's just assume that you didn't want to do that. I would just X out their exposure here. I think that's the simplest way to do it. So, but again, I mean, you know, the bigger your lineup pool gets here, the harder it's going to be to continue doing this. And I think the less value there is in doing this. Because in reality, right, like if we have 50%, let's say we're playing 150, we have 50% Cease, right? Like, and, you know, 22% Cleveland stacks, right? Like Cease himself and Cleveland stacks both have some of their own individual chances of being in the optimal lineup, right? No player is a guarantee. So I think it does actually make sense to have the more lineups you are playing. I think it does make sense to have some lineups where you have the pitcher and some other lineups where you have the stack facing him. But I can see why in three lineups, maybe you wouldn't want to do that. So I would probably say just spot check it for your three lineups here in step three. Figure out what pitchers you have, right? And then just make sure you don't have any stacks of the team here and just remove them if you do. So, but Diego said, I don't mind in 150. I just don't want to hedge that way on a three entry max. Yeah, I get that. I think for three lineups, I think it can make some sense. In baseball, I end up spreading out so much. So, but I definitely get that. So. Uh, DFS Syracuse said, when building 150, what's the best way to get the stacks you want? With ownership fade on high, I get a lot of the lower chance teams. It kind of depends on, like, how, I guess I would say, how certain you are on what teams you want those to be, right? So, like, if you have already decided what teams you want to stack, and you know that you have no interest in stacking any of the teams besides the ones that you've decided that you already want to stack, I think the easiest thing to do would be to just set a stacking rule for that, right? So on DK, maybe you come over here and you say, at least 5 players from the same team. You can just click remove all here, and you can go in and pick the teams you want to stack, right? So maybe you want, maybe you're skipping on, a handful of teams, right? Maybe just like some of the teams with some of the lower totals on the slate, right? So that would be a very easy way to do that. And then you won't, you may still get smaller stacks of those other teams, but your big 5 stack in every lineup will only include the teams you want. What I think is the best practice way of doing this is I would instead build your lineups, give yourself a big pool of 1500 lineups to work with. And to do this on step 3, and the main reason why I would say you should do that is because it will give you the opportunity to see if maybe there is something you're missing, right? Because if you're trying to take down a large field 150 max tournament, you do need to get pretty different. And without running the build and seeing what you're getting there, you may miss that there's an opportunity to stack against a chalky, cheap pitcher by playing a team with a low total, right? Or, Cease is like 35% owned. And I don't know. He had given up 2 runs before the start of the slate, but like maybe you're getting some Guardian stacks like we just saw before, who's a team that has a 3.5% implied total, but clearly has some percent chance to end up in the optimal lineup. And without running the build, first of all, to see that, you would have never gotten the opportunity to know that that was maybe a good team to play. But if you know what teams you want, if you've already done that research or you've already figured this out or you've done another test build and you've already identified what teams you want, I'd say the easiest thing to do would be to go in here and create a stacking rule that says put 5 players in every lineup and only use these teams. So, but I'll let this build finish and I'll kind of talk about what I'm doing here, what I mean by doing this in step 3 here. So, okay. So we come over here now. So now we have this nice big pool of 1500 lineups. We need 150. Now we can kind of research and fine tune and dial in here a little bit, right? And maybe you say, I don't want to play. Maybe you say, I don't want to play Cleveland, right? So you X Cleveland. And I don't want to play Detroit. So you X Detroit. And you don't want to play Baltimore. And when I say X, what I'm actually doing here is I'm setting their maximum exposure to 0. And I don't want to play Oakland. Right? I'm kind of just picking out some of the lower total teams from the early slate. And maybe this ends up being your lineup set. Right. So the more like certain you are about what you want to see in your lineups, the more I would recommend making those adjustments in steps 1 or 2 so that your pool of lineups in step 3 are a little bit better here. But Shokus said, hey, Jordan, how many unique players do you set in your NBA DFS lineups? I don't adjust the min uniques pretty much ever. I almost always leave it at 1. I will occasionally raise the sim variance slider if I want more diversity in my lineups, but I don't often adjust the min unique slider or the min unique setting very much. The reason I like to use sim variance more instead is because sim variance will increase the diversity of your lineups, but it does so in a way that also increases the upside of your lineups. Because as this slider gets higher and higher, the number of simulations that we're using to build each individual lineup gets smaller, up to a single game simulation at 10. So if, using single game simulations for every single game on the slate and building a lineup based on that is a pretty wide range of outcomes for each player, right? I mean, if we look, like there's, 5% of the sims for Jokic, he scores 40 points or 5% or more, he scores 40 points or less, right? He's scoring 85 points in 3% of sims. So when you start thinking about a single game simulation, right, that's a big wide range of outcomes, that very much naturally increases the diversity of your lineups. So I don't increase this very much, just most of the time, because if I want more diversity, raising the sim variance instead is a lot better of a way to get there. I think the best argument to raising the min uniques is if you're playing a sport or a contest type where sim variance is already at 10 and you're looking at your lineups and you want even more diversity from there, then I think increasing this to like 2 and seeing how those lineups look is a good idea. But it's not something that I adjust too much. So Suaveless said, hey, new to SaberSim, love the tools, but sometimes I feel like I'm confused about knowing how much ownership I have compared to the field. So the leverage column here, right, in step 3, so after you've built your lineups, this column essentially describes the difference between the percentage of your lineups that have a certain player in it versus what we expect the percentage of lineups the field will have that have that player in it, right? So this column here, 61%, right? That's saying you have 61% more exposure to Jokic than we are expecting the field to in this contest. And just keep in mind that obviously this ownership projection is just a projection. It's an estimate of what percentage of lineups will have a certain player in it by the field. We don't know what this number is going to be, and it's going to vary for different contests. But the leverage column is this number minus this number, and it will kind of show you how much exposure you have versus the field. And we can do the negative version as well, right? The player that we are fading the most compared to the field in this set of lineups is Draymond Green. We expect the field to have him in 21.8%. We only have him in 7.3%. So that's negative 20.8 leverage. So that will kind of show you that number. So let me know if that helps. And I think it's a really good way of, like, you know, one thing that I like to do is sort by the leverage column, positive and negative, and look for outliers. Like, typically, if my next highest exposed player is 24.7%, I probably don't feel like I need 61 percentage points of leverage on one player on the slate. That's typically a good reason for me to bring my exposure down, to bring that a little bit more in line with some of the other players here, so I'm not crazy high exposed to one player in the field. So let me know if that helps. All right. Cool. I don't see any other questions coming in here. We are right at about the end of the stream here for today. So thank you to everybody that tuned in, asked questions, participated here. Appreciate you guys all tuning in. A big thank you, of course, to everybody that watches and listens to the stream as the recording up on YouTube that goes live later this afternoon. For those of you that are new to SaberSim, new to this stream, or maybe just haven't yet signed up, we do have a free no strings attached trial on our site, sabersim.com. You can come in, check us out for 7 days. If you don't like it, you can cancel. We won't charge you, no problem. But end of the week, I always say, is like the best time to sign up for our trial, because you get to play baseball, you get to play playoff basketball, but we also have sims for MMA, for NASCAR, for Formula One. There's another race going on this weekend. If you're into esports, right, the weekends are always fun for League of Legends and Counter-Strike DFS. We have simulations for all of that on our app. So come sign up, check us out, give us a try. If you have tried us before and have had a trial in the past, we reset everyone's trial at the start of baseball season. So even if you have come and tried us before and used a trial before, you can re-sign up, get another free 7 days. We make a lot of changes. We have another big change coming up here next week. So we've made a lot of changes to the app, to our models, things like that. If you've checked us out before, give us another try, sabersim.com. I will be gone for a couple days here. I mentioned it yesterday. So I will be out tomorrow, Monday and Tuesday of next week. There will be no office hours tomorrow. I believe there may be somebody else, Andy or somebody else from the team, maybe will come on and do an office hours for you guys here on Monday or Tuesday of next week. But if not, enjoy your weekends. Good luck. Have fun playing DFS and doing whatever else you guys have going on. And I will be back on Wednesday of next week. So until then, take care. See ya.